For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast. We know a lot about hypertension in Australia. For example, we know that Australian data show raised blood pressure to be responsible for 43% of coronary heart disease, 41% of stroke, 65% of the burden of hypertensive heart disease, 38% of chronic kidney disease, 32% of atrial fibrillation and flutter, and 3.6% of dementia. In 2017-18, the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare reported that blood pressure control rates in Australia were only 32%. When the control rates in the US dropped to 44%, a national commitment was made to make hypertension control a major priority. The question could be asked, why are we not doing the same here? In a perspective published by the MJA this week, a group of authors are proposing exactly that, a national commitment, including a task force with a remit to improve blood pressure control in Australia to at least 70%, a doubling of the current rate. Professor Alta Scutter is Professor of Cardiovascular Medicine at the University of New South Wales and a Professorial Fellow at the George Institute for Global Health. Professor Marcus Schleich is the Dobney Chair in Clinical Research at the University of Western Australia. Both are co-authors of the perspective and both are my special guests today. What is the current definition of high blood pressure in Australia?
The current definition of hypertension in Australia is still based on the 2016 Heart Foundation guidelines, and the threshold with office blood pressure readings is above 140 over 90 millimeters of mercury when you take readings in the office.
Is that where it should be, or is there an argument for making that threshold lower?
Well, there has been a change in the threshold definition of hypertension in the United States, and they now recommend that everything above 130 over 80 is actually considered grade 1 hypertension. And there has been a lot of debate around that, and you know, we could probably easily fill an hour to discuss that topic, but I guess we probably stick with what is currently the state of the art in Australia, which is still 140 over 90, and that is actually, with the exception of the United States, the globally accepted definition. So we'll probably stick with that.
What is the burden of raised blood pressure in Australia in terms of stroke, cardiovascular disease, dementia, etc.? Do we know?
Yes, I think if we look at the data of the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare mostly and the Australian burden of disease, raised blood pressure is responsible for about 40% of coronary heart disease, 40% of stroke, 65% of hypertensive heart disease, and also contributes to dementia, kidney disease, and atrial fibrillation. That's why it is one of the leading risk factors for most of the cardiovascular diseases, as we know. And when you look at the national data, it is about 34% of Australians have hypertension.
And how does that compare with other nations?
In general, I would say that Australia does compare well in terms of the prevalence. So the actual number, it's basically one in every three adults older than 18. It's quite a lot if you look around you. Mm-hmm. One in every three may have hypertension. So in higher income countries, it is usually better, the prevalence, than in the low and middle income regions in the world. And I think that aspect has improved quite a bit over the past three decades in Australia. The problem, I would say, is not so much the prevalence, but that those who have hypertension, how well they are controlled. And that is a very different angle to look at.
So what is the control rate in Australia?
That is the major problem. Australians never really look so closely at those figures and compare it to other countries. So a recent paper, global paper that compared several countries, looked at this. And also, if we look at the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare data, 68% of people with hypertension in Australia are uncontrolled, whether they take hypertension medication or not. So that is quite a huge percentage, and it doesn't compare well with other high-income countries. In fact, I think it compares very poorly when you compare it to the US, UK, Canada, Ireland. We are performing much worse than they are.
Let's talk a little bit about those other countries. What's happened in Canada and the US in terms of their national control programs?
Look, there's very good examples of what can be achieved with combined measures and really a national agenda. And Canada is perhaps one of the outstanding countries in that space. So they have really tried to tackle the problem in its entirety, from increasing awareness in the population, educating healthcare professionals in terms of how to better measure blood pressure, diagnose elevated blood pressure, and manage the blood pressure. They have very regular updates in regards to their guidelines. So people, it's just much more in the face of people, kind of constantly, and keep the awareness up. And that altogether certainly has improved their control rates, their awareness significantly. Mm-hmm. Although one has to say, again, the data on which their numbers are based is to a large extent based on home blood pressure monitoring. And that may bring in a bit of a bias, but nevertheless, the idea is there, the principles of what needs to be done and how this can be achieved are there. We just have to take it on and really develop our own national agenda in order to get, into a similar space.
In your paper, you mentioned that when the US control rate dropped to about 44%, they made a national commitment to improving that situation. If we're only at 32%, why don't we have a national commitment?
Yes, that is exactly why we decided to write this paper. We really need to put hypertension or raised blood pressure front and center on the national agenda. And I think 32% is completely unacceptable. So this is based on the specific data set. It could be, hopefully it's slightly better when you look at other data sets, but nevertheless, I think there's much room for improvement. And even if you look at the other prioritization documents from the MRFF, cardiovascular mission, and other documents, blood pressure just is almost missing.
Yeah.
And therefore, we realize we need to put it at the center face so that people really recognize it. It is the leading risk factor of death in the world, so we can't ignore it. And there are actually, as Marcus clearly mentioned, there are definitely ways to improve it. And it's just to focus the attention of a lot of stakeholders, government, NGOs, researchers, the public. We need to come together and we can do much better.
So how did it get this bad? What happened to that awareness? What happened to that prevention strategy?
I think we have become a bit too complacent in regards to elevated blood pressure from various perspectives. Within the population, so many people have high blood pressure. And you talk, apparently the data suggests one in three adults in Australia would have elevated blood pressure. So if you talk to your friends, colleagues, you'll hear a lot of people have it. And if a lot of people are affected, we tend to believe, well, can't be that bad, can't be such a big problem. I think that is just the awareness, the mindset that has crept in a bit. But it's not only from a population perspective, but also from a physicians and health or allied health or health professionals as well. We know that most of the encounters with general practice are actually because of elevated blood pressure. So there's great opportunity for particular primary care to take more of a stance in that space. But again, we may have been a bit more complacent. We often perhaps find excuses of why blood pressure on a specific day may be a bit higher, and we don't necessarily always take action. So something we summarize often as a bit of physician inertia is an important aspect. And GPs are very, very busy, no doubt, and during the pandemic in particular. But we should not forget about the most important risk factor of all. And that is really what this call is about. And we have to tackle the problem at all its roots, and there are several of those, and only that will allow us to improve on all the fronts and improve control rates.
You suggest we need a national task force. Tell us more about that. Who should be on that task force?
Yeah, I think a task force is really the very first step. That is also the recognition that we have a problem and that we can do something about this. So the task force, as Marcus mentioned, I think it's important to recognize the critical role that general practitioners play. Yeah, this is the goal phase. This is where patients with high blood pressure are usually detected first. And that's where management should be at its most effective. So I think there should be a very good representation of GPs. But also cardiologists and specialist nephrologists would be important. But on the other hand, I think it's often neglected the important role that nurse practitioners and pharmacists play in the community as well, and also community members themselves. Researchers should be there and should have a voice in terms of what are the challenges they face in managing own blood pressure yourself. what would be the best ways to approach this moving forward? What can we learn from others, but what is also unique to the Australian situation? And I can also perhaps follow on from that. There are a lot of things we can do without or before patients go to a clinical care. For example, raised blood pressure, even at blood pressure levels much lower than 140 over 90, can already be damaging when you are 20 years old. You know, so you're not detected, your blood pressure looks normal. And therefore, even if you're 20 years old and you have a blood pressure of 130 over 85, it will not be treated. So the problem is, or the opportunity here is to also look at population-based interventions that can be undertaken that would have benefits across all. And that refers to salt restriction or sugar efforts to reduce sugar intake, which on the other hand contributes to obesity, which also increases blood pressure. So there are several well-known population-based interventions. So wider scale, I think, preventive care from a population level is really important.
I'm chatting today with Professor Alta Skatte and Professor Marcus Schleich about hypertension, why we should control it better, and how we can go about doing that in Australia. Their article is available at mja.com.au, and the full web address is available in the show notes to this podcast. If you're enjoying this podcast, we have a back catalogue of episodes just waiting for you to explore. They are free to access and you can find them at mja.com.au/podcasts. You can also subscribe to our future podcasts through Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, Podomatic and Audible. Just search for Medical Journal of Australia. Back to our chat. What's the state of research into raised blood pressure?
Well, research is extremely important and continues to be the case. So one aspect of that call we put out was also that we have to increase funding for research in this aspect. And that does not only relate to research trying to uncover the mechanisms that ultimately lead to a rise in blood pressure, but also implementing some of these steps we have discussed. How can they best be implemented to really make an impact on a population and community level? We essentially really have to raise the game in all of these fronts. And if we leave one of those important pillars out of the picture, we're not going to achieve as much as we probably want and as much as we need to achieve. So it really has to be a concerted effort. And this was, a short piece. Of course, there could be much more detail in it, but I think we do highlight the major stakeholders. And it is absolutely crucial that we get everybody on board. There's a lot of people who have interest, not always directly in blood pressure, but for example, stroke, people mm-hmm. with heart attacks, peripheral artery disease. High blood pressure plays such an important role in all of those, and therefore it affects so many people and everybody should have an interest in it. This is really to make the point that blood pressure per se is so important, and by tackling it, we can make such a big difference, with focusing on one aspect, while we should not forget everything around it. And I would like to remind the listeners, the audience as well, on the concept of overall cardiovascular risk assessment, which blood pressure is one part of, a very important one. But whatever we say here, we focus on blood pressure, but of course, we're not saying at all that we want to forget glucose control, cholesterol control, stop smoking, etc. Mm-hmm. So again, it's bringing it all together to improve health in general for the Australian and, for that matter, the global community.
You mentioned earlier, Marcus, about home devices for measuring blood pressure. Are they good enough?
Oh, look, absolutely. We have very good devices, and it is very important that people use validated devices. And there has been a lot of work done here from Australia, from our colleagues in Tasmania, in particular, Professor Jim Sharman and his group. And we know a lot. We have a lot of devices. Technology is developing very fast, and there's a huge opportunity to engage consumers, the modern word we use very frequently, are consumer engagement. I prefer to speak about patients and people we deal with. But as Alta mentioned, before them being actually seen in a clinical environment, there's a lot that can be done, you know, at home. And one of it is home blood pressure monitoring. I very frequently in my clinic see patients who come, well, I happened to visit my grandmother who had a home blood pressure device just for fun. We measured it. It was quite high, and she told me to see a doctor. So, you know, this is something we have to work on. And there's beautiful examples from the US, for example, where they engaged barbershops, particularly in the African American community, because, you know, people trust if you have your hair cut. Yep. This you want this to be done by a person you trust because you want to look good, I guess. So it was a wonderful experiment where they saw that they can improve management of blood pressure by putting that into the community. So we may have to think about novel approaches, not the very traditional ones, you know, see the GP and then go to a tertiary provider, yeah, perhaps, and just go down. We have to come up with new ideas, and the developing technology really helps us to facilitate this, while we have to make sure we use, you know, appropriately validated and good devices, because we know there's a lot of junk out there which should probably not be used.
Do GPs need refresher courses or training or re-education on this topic?
I think that is a really good question. Overall, we've seen that there is the habit, you know, when you've been treating high blood pressure the same way for many, many years, you'll keep on using the same medication, the same strategy in terms of increasing the same dose and so on. And the mm-hmm. problem with that is international guidelines have really developed nicely over the past few years. There's been a rapid number of new guidelines, one after the other. And there's been great research as well to say there's new strategies that we can actually implement that's not very difficult, that is safe and much more effective to lower blood pressure in a short space of time. And I think in general, this has not been taken up well in Australia. So I know the Australian guidelines are dated 2016, mm-hmm. and there has been several guidelines in the US, in Europe, in international guidelines where both Marcus and myself were involved. They were released in 2020. So I think, and this is currently under development, the new guidelines for Australia for absolute cardiovascular risk. And hopefully that will also incorporate some of these new techniques to better manage blood pressure from the beginning. Marcus right. also referred to the challenge of clinician inertia. And I believe that is one of the main challenges in improving treatment. If the blood pressure is slightly high in the clinic, is it white coat? Is it just badly measured? And that has always been the problem with blood pressure. When you look at absolute cardiovascular risk, cholesterol levels are stable, age is stable, your sex is stable, whether you smoke or not is stable. Usually you want them to stop, but it's not something that changes by the second, like with blood pressure. So it is really difficult to measure. And for a clinician, I appreciate the challenge to make a decision on the call. Is this now really high? Should I treat or not? And that's why home blood pressures are such an effective tool. And I really yeah. think we should take that up more frequently and see if that can improve the management as well.
If I could add one point, sure. I really would make sure, you know, our general practitioners in general, I feel, do a fantastic job. They have to deal with so many things. And mm-hmm. there's really nice data to show that around 50% of all the patients they see, they come with 20 different diagnoses. So, and the top one is usually hypertension. Knowing your way around those 20 will cover a huge proportion. And the other percentage is then made up by 80, 90 diagnoses, which is much more difficult to keep up with. Yeah. But, you know, focusing on those big ticket items, and again, hypertension, unfortunately being number one, is something we have to be aware of, and we have to be on the ball in terms of what is up to date. We have new medications, we have combination therapy, which we probably should implement earlier than we currently do, that improves adherence. There's been a lot of new data also in terms of what kind of blood pressure measures to use, etc. While the GPs in general know a lot about it, there's always continued need for education, and that will help us to keep them at the top of their game for this, you know, biggest ticket item, if you wish.
Is it possible to quantify, in terms of lives saved or even money saved, what increasing Australia's control rate would mean?
Yes, we included this also in the perspective piece. It is based on some previous work that has been done in Australia, and it was indicated if we achieve a 25% reduction in the current prevalence of hypertension, which is 34%, through population-based or other approaches, we could save 37,000 lives and return a $34 billion in GDP to the Australian economy, which is, of course, massive. And that's by doing small steps, I think, could actually achieve this number, as has been shown in Canada and in the US, have also actually improved a lot in the past by implementing such steps. There's one thing I would like to mention.
Sure.
In Australia, there has been a lot of emphasis on the older people and the challenge and the increase in the number of people in the older age groups. And it's, of course, in these populations that about 75% of people have high blood pressure or hypertension. So it's really very relevant there. And it's also associated with dementia. So the link between blood pressure and pulsatility, so the how up and down your blood pressure goes, is also related to dementia, and more research focus on that. So I think in context of that approach in Australia, we should also emphasize at the same time better blood pressure management in this population group. So it really goes from young ages, from children to the elderly. We really need to address it throughout, and there could be massive benefits also in the next decade.
Yeah, look, one last word to our general practitioners. I really love to engage. I've done quite a bit of education, and I really love the discussions. I always learn probably more than they do from me. But one very important aspect, which has recently been published again, we often have discussion, we may not always reach target blood pressure levels, although we should try to get to those. And often people are a bit frustrated. What I usually tell them, it is now again proven that for every 5 millimeter mercury blood pressure reduction, you achieve a 10% reduction in major cardiovascular events. So 5 millimeters reduction, millimeters of mercury reduction, 10% relative risk reduction. This is dramatic. This is substantial. So, you know, try to get to targets, but whatever you can achieve will be of benefit for your patients. So it's always worthwhile to consider that, and that will make a huge difference to your patients.
Thank you both for your time. My thanks to my special guests today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts, or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.